to Poppin' Packs, a segment where I open an old pack of basketball cards with a person from the NBA world. Today's guest is New York Times best-selling author Shai Serrano. Shai talks about what it was like growing up under a Rockets-Spurs rivalry, how Reggie Miller became his first favourite player of all time, and how Lafonso Ellis had one of the coolest blocks the NBA has ever seen.
It's connecting. There he is.
Yo.
Shai Serrano. How are
what
you,
up, Lee Ellis?
How's it going?
How's Australia?
Well, Australia's not too bad, actually. It's doing better than America right now, but that's not really saying much. Everywhere's doing better than America right now. How is sunny San Antonio?
Super sunny and terrible, but you
right.
know, we're
right.
getting there.
Hey, I saw you were on a panel recently with George Lopez. How did that go?
That went great. My family was very excited about that one. That's like the most family response I've ever gotten about a thing I was on.
Is that right?
Yeah, George Lopez in the like Mexican community, he's like our George Washington. You know what I'm saying? So they were pumped. They were fucking pumped. I got messages from uncles who didn't even message me when like Obama shouted me out.
Yeah.
But this one, they were like fucking fired up. Hold on one second.
Yeah, man.
All right.
I've got to ask you. I know Barack Obama's technically shouted you out twice, hasn't he? Because he recommended
other
things.
Yeah, yeah, you're right.
And then
he
added you in a tweet. Was it cooler that he did it or The Rock did it at that time? Which one?
The Rock. The Rock was in Fast Five, so The Rock is going to win that
contest.
It goes The Rock. No, it goes like all-time order, Missy Elliott. When she tweeted at me, then The Rock, and then Obama. That's my list. That's the three. That's the top three.
There's not many times Barack Obama would be third on someone's list of people who have tweeted him. But that's great. And listen, it's great today because I've got my Manu Ginobili jersey.
Yeah. Today's the anniversary.
Yeah. Yeah. His very first game against the Lakers too. And I mean, what a guy. What a career he had. I mean, he's probably my fourth favorite all time. I've got Jordan, Hakeem Olajuwon, Isaiah Thomas, and then Manu Ginobili. I mean, it's hard for him to crack that.
He's that high up there. That's incredible.
Yeah.
That's very, very, it's a very solid top four.
Hey, speaking of very solid, there's a huge day coming up on Tuesday. Huge day, of course. It's going to impact not just America and the world. What are you feeling? What are you thinking is going to happen on November 3 there?
Oh, I think that Trump is going to lose, and then I think he's going to try and do some fucked up shit to not have lost. You know what I'm saying? So there's honestly no telling.
No, yeah, it's going to be crazy the next 2 months, no matter what happens. We just have to hope that some sort of sensibility there prevails. Early voting has opened, I guess, in Texas. Have you guys been out and voted yet?
Yeah, Laramie and I went. We had to go like in separate shifts because we're still doing the social distancing thing.
Yeah.
So we don't want to take the kids to the place, so... You know.
Awesome. Okay, well, listen, why we're here is because I've got a pack of FLIR 1995-96 basketball cards.
I love it.
That's right in your alleyway, I believe, isn't it?
That's right in there. Anything in the 90s, that's where I was like coming of age, as they
say. All right. Well, who are you hoping for? Who are you hoping we get today?
Oh, I want all the big names. I feel like we're going to get a bunch of – that was like a good era for tall white guys who couldn't do much but be tall. I feel like we're going to get a couple of those, but I want I want a Barkley, I want a Jordan, I want a David Robinson. Anybody on the Spurs would be awesome.
All right, well let's see what we got. This first guy is a good one actually, because this guy was known as a quiet player, sort of a baby-faced assassin throughout his career. But in The Last Dance, which we saw in the summer, he actually had one of his best moments going against Michael Jordan, where he hit a game sealing shot in the playoffs. And then started talking his trash to Michael Jordan. And not many people get to do that, but he did. Now, Jordan ended up killing him in the series. But this guy, he broke character, I'll say.
Yeah. Oh, wait, I'm supposed to guess who it is,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Oh, that's my guy from the Magic, BJ, when he was on the Magic.
Yeah, BJ Armstrong. He was on the Bulls in this particular one. But, I thought that was a really awesome moment in The Last Dance when you see B.J. Armstrong talking smack in Chicago to Michael Jordan.
Yeah, that's super cool. That's like a thing. You know, people always ask, what's a time you wish that Twitter was around for NBA stuff? That would have been a fucking great one. Because everybody on Twitter NBA Twitter anyway. We like love to celebrate all of the, you know, the players who come through and just do godly type things. Like when somebody catches fire and like LeBron in this most recent playoff run in the finals or whatever. That's always fun to do, but it loses its fucking absolute mind when a player on like a tier or two below does something great and then like talk shit about it. Like if we would have got to see this one, it would have been fucking nuts, just absolute nuts. Because especially they had already, you know, that conversation starts up very quickly. It's like, oh shit, are they going to lose again?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It would have been fun.
Yeah. I like as well that how BJ kind of knew that that was probably the only win he was going to get, but he made sure he cashed all his chips in on that one time.
You gotta live in the moment. Nobody's gonna talk about the time you hit a game winner and didn't say anything.
Exactly.
You gotta let it fly when you can.
All right, one for one, good start. Now this next guy, it's interesting. The team he's playing for here is the first team he played on, but not a lot of people remember him on this team. He's playing for the Denver Nuggets. He spent most of his career, or his best years anyway, in Indiana, played for Toronto and Chicago. I think he ended in Phoenix, a left-handed shooter. He's made a very good career in the media since retiring from the NBA. Sometimes has a baseball bat with him when he's on TV. A lefty.
I lost you there.
Oh, you're there?
For a second.
Oh, okay. Let me, I don't know how much of that you heard, so yeah. I'll start it again here. This guy, he's playing for the Denver Nuggets on this team, but you don't really remember him on the Nuggets. Most people will remember him on the Indiana Pacers. He also played for the Chicago Bulls, the Raptors, and he ended with the Phoenix Suns. And he's made a very good career in the media since retiring from the NBA.
That's my guy Jalen, right?
Yeah.
Jalen?
That's him. Yeah. That's him. Where is it? There we go. Denver Nuggets, Jalen Rose.
Yeah, I didn't even remember that he played on the Nuggets. Like that was not a thing I had in my head from it.
Yeah, I think he played two seasons there, but he was like a rookie, and then you know, like he just didn't get much burnout there. And when he went to Indiana, that was when he was obviously that was when the best days of his career anyway. So,
oh yeah, he was awesome in Indiana. I loved him on the with Reggie.
Yeah, I don't think he made an All-Star game, but he must have been close there around the year 2000, 2001, when the Pacers were pretty good, and he was. You know, he was second or third best player on that team anyway.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He's fucking cool. I got to meet him one time. He was super nice.
Nice. All right, this next guy, interesting this guy, because I'm pretty sure he's the only player to represent this South American country when he played. He played mainly for the Rockets, but he also played for the Spurs. He was, I think he's from Venezuela. I think that's where he was from. Bit of a tough guy, bit of a stocky guy, like a power forward / small forward. And yeah, he would have been one of the few Spanish speaking dudes, I think, in the NBA at the time. And pretty sure no one else has represented Venezuela before.
Oof. I don't think I know that guy. Who is that guy?
Carl Herrera.
Oh, Carl Herrera. God, dog it.
You remember him on the Spurs?
Yeah, I remember him on the Spurs. I don't know why I didn't think of Carl Herrera. You know what it is? I try to block out everybody from those teams.
Right.
Because everybody just talks shit to me about them. You know, Houston and San Antonio, we don't like each other.
Yeah.
So every time I, like, start tweeting about the Spurs or whatever, somebody starts sending me tweets from the fucking mid-90s Rockets. Listen, if any of y'all Rockets fans are in the chat right now, you can't send me fucking gifts that aren't in HD. Like, it doesn't matter. That's too far back. A quarter of a century, and you're fucking still talking shit? Get out of here. So I blocked out Carl Herrera. I blocked out Vernon Maxwell, Mario Elie. I kept Mario Elie in my head because he won us a title in 1999.
Yeah.
Clyde Drexler, fucking Sam Cassell. Sam Cassell's cool.
Yeah.
Hakeem, whatever.
Yeah. So that's it, though. If they played for the Rockets, no matter, apart from Mario Elie, if they played for the Spurs, that's it. You can't, you know, they're out of your life.
X them out. X them out of here. They're awesome. That's like a good, like the mid-90s Rockets team, super cool team for everybody except for San Antonio. And San Antonio, no thanks.
What about then that day Hakeem Olajuwon did the dirty to David Robinson in San Antonio? You don't remember that one?
I don't know what you're talking about. I wasn't watching TV at the time, so I don't know. I don't know anything that you're saying right now.
All right. Well, you're definitely going to know this next guy because from what I've seen online, I'm pretty sure this was your first sort of hero in the NBA. This is your first, the first guy you liked the most.
Did you get a Reggie in the pack?
Yeah, I got a Reggie Miller.
Reggie in the pack?
There you go. Yeah.
That's destiny right there. Of all of the packs, of all of the years, you came through with a Reggie. I don't know if I believe that this really happened, though. I think you might be messing with me here.
How did that come about? You know, obviously a Spurs fan, but Reggie was the first player that you was your first hero, and he wrote the forward for your book, wasn't it?
Yeah, he was the first person I thought of, the first person I like wanted to ask to do the forward. Kristen Ledlow, thankfully, I hit her up and I was like, hey, I know, like, I see y'all talking. Can you, like, I'm trying to make this happen. Can you do it? And she was just like, it'll get done. Give me a minute. And then, like, a couple of days later, I was on the phone with Reggie Miller. It was fucking outrageous. Yeah, he's my favorite. First basketball player I ever fell in love with. The one who really made me, like, fall in love with the NBA. You know, everybody has a player like that. First one that really got into their chest. But with Reggie, what it was I grew up in San Antonio. I've been going to Spurs games my whole life. I was born in 81, so by like 85, 86, my dad is taking me to the games, and I'm watching the Spurs. And the Spurs have, even that far back, had like a very, I don't know what you call it, for their reputation, you know the reputation the Spurs have. They're just like fucking, like, they're like the military, like who cares for them, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So like that was the basketball that I knew. We had our superstar, it was David Robinson, super tall, super fucking handsome and Christian and like, very straight down the line, never talk shit or anything. So that was the only type of basketball that I knew because that was the only type of basketball I was watching. Right. And then, like, I saw a game with Reggie. They would do, like, on Sundays or on the weekends, you get, like, a game on NBC or whatever. And I watched a game, and Reggie was playing, and he just stood out immediately because he was running his mouth the whole time.
Yes.
He's fucking shoving people and talking shit. And I just thought he was the coolest guy in the world when I saw him doing that. And then I was like, I'm trying to make sure from that point forward, watching the playoffs, because Indiana was usually in there. You get to see him even more. This was before there was like NBA League Pass or anything like that. So I could only watch the games that showed up on TV. I could only read the stories that showed up, in Sports Illustrated or whatever magazine. I could only get pieces of it. And it just sort of built him up more and more in my head. But yeah, I just thought he was the fucking coolest dude. Talking shit is my favorite thing in basketball. It's like the number one thing. And I just loved him for it. I loved him.
It's pretty funny that he's not even the best basketball player in his family either. That's pretty
funny. Yeah, that's outrageous.
Yeah.
That's outrageous. Like, he has such an unbelievable story of, like, he had to wear the braces on his legs.
Yeah.
And he's just got, like, this whole fucking aura about him that I just loved. I especially loved that he was never the best player of like his generation, because he was in the same era with Jordan, but he was fucking not scared of anybody. He was trying to kill every single person who got on the court with him, and that to me was cool, because there are some players who, like, they play that way, and you can tell, like, Reggie Miller has never missed a shot because he was afraid ever. He's missed a bunch of shots, but never because he was afraid. And I love players like that, especially because I'm the exact opposite. Like, if I'm playing a basketball game and it gets close, I start short arming everything. Don't pass me the ball, because I'm not.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't want it. But Reggie wants it. So I was always drawn to those players.
So that incident there, like with Spike Lee, that must be one of your top like two or three moments in NBA history.
Dude, I was so fucking fired up. Yeah. I didn't even know who Spike Lee was at the time. I was like 15 years old or whatever when it happened. I didn't know anything.
Yeah.
All I knew was he was talking to someone in the crowd and the announcers were eating it up. And I was like, yes, I've never seen anything like that.
Yeah, that's awesome. And then, you know, for him to write that in your book, I mean, that must have just been like just an incredible moment. Like, for your story to get to that point where you're talking to Reggie and then he writes the book. I mean, that's just a great story. It's really fun to see. It's really cool. And then the book goes on to be a New York Times bestseller as well.
Yeah, I was very proud when that happened, but I was especially proud when Reggie decided to do that or agreed to do that. Like, I mean, it's like a childhood hero when you get to talk to this person. And what was really cool was he was like super fucking cool about the whole process. We talked on the phone for like over an hour.
Wow.
And he was just like, you know, happy to talk about anything. The same thing happened with the rap book or with the music book. I mean, the movie book. I get to talk to these people who I just like have looked up to since I was a kid. Yeah. And each time it's turned out they've been super fucking cool. It's great. It's really cool.
Have you ever met Reggie or shot around with him anywhere? Like, has that ever happened anytime?
No, I've never met any of them in person.
Oh, right. Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. Well, this next guy, he was a San Antonio Spur briefly. And in fact, I think he became the first player to hit 1,000 threes in the NBA, and he did it when he was a San Antonio Spur. One of the first sharpshooters.
Dale Ellis?
Dale Ellis. There you
Boom!
Go.
Yeah. I love Dale.
Yeah.
I love Dale. Yeah, he, again, like Reggie, he's a three-point shooter. Also, what I really liked about Dale Ellis was he had a fucking a flat top that I just thought was great. But, yeah, he was one of those ones who showed up in San Antonio, and he was perfect for San Antonio. All he wanted to do was fucking get some shots up, and it felt like he hit everything. And it was just cool. Because this was back before three-pointers were, like, a thing. You know what I'm saying? And so to see somebody shoot more than one in a game, you just lost your mind about it. He was really, really popular in San Antonio.
He had one of the best All-Star game weekends ever. For a guy who only ever made one All-Star weekend,
he started. Made both of it.
Yeah, he started, scored 27 points for the West. I think he won the three-point shootout, too. It was in 89 in Houston, I think. Or Miami, maybe. It was in Miami. And that was it. That was the only time he ever made an All-Star game, but he cashed in. He's probably got the highest average.
That's becoming the theme of our episode here, is like guys who made the most of their moment.
Yeah.
Like B.J. Armstrong, Carl Herrera, Reggie Miller, Dell Ellis. Yeah. We're on it.
Yeah. All right, this next guy, interesting guy, because his career started off really hot. In Milwaukee. He was a big guy. He was like 6'10". And then he moved to Seattle. He got traded to Seattle. He made an All-Star game then. But then his career kind of petered out. I think he had a few issues there with drugs and things like that. But for about 3 or 4 years there, really, really good player in the NBA. But injuries and a few other things caught up with him. And, mainly you probably think of him as Milwaukee and Seattle. I think at the end of his career, he might have bounced.
Is it Vin? Are we talking about Vin?
Vin Baker. There you go.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember Vin. Yeah, he was one of those ones who was like, you talk to some kids in school who, again, you can only watch the games that are on TV in San Antonio, and there were not a lot of Bucks games. So you maybe saw him like once or twice a season, if that. Yeah. And he would just fucking kill, and you were convinced he's the best player on the planet. And then like a couple years later, you realize, maybe not. But yeah, he was really good.
Yeah, a few guys have that though, where for like 3 or 4 years, you know, they're just, they're totally dominant, and then whether it's injuries or just, you know, wrong team, wrong coach or whatever, then their career just kind of sort of fades away. I mean, Dale Ellis was a little bit like that too, because he was in Dallas. You know, couldn't get any burn. He goes to Seattle. He averages 27 a game. And then he sort of just bounced around as a bit of a journeyman. But, some of those guys, like 4 or 5 years, they're just on top of the league. And that's it. And then, you know, then they just move on. And I think Vin Baker was another one of those guys.
Yeah. I thought for a second it was going to be Glenn Robinson. Mm. You remember Glenn?
Yeah, yeah. Another guy similar to that, you know, like... Yeah. Number one pick in 94, I think he was. And he ended his career in San Antonio, if I remember. I don't know if he played much at the end there, but he was on that roster anyway.
Yeah, he came through for a bit.
Don't go anywhere. I'll be back with more of Poppin' Packs with Shea Serrano right after this. All right, this next guy's a good one because there's a chapter, I think, in your Basketball and Other Things book about this guy.
Uh-oh.
He had a bad moment. A bad moment.
Oh, Nick Anderson.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Oh, man. I feel bad for this guy because he was a good player. He was a good shooter, good player. But those free throws, his career never recovered from those.
Yeah, dude. excuse me. What was really crazy or really interesting was he's one of the few guys who has, like, talked about how a moment shifted everything for him. I think he was shooting like 70-something% from the free throw line that year, and then he missed some shots, and it plummeted to like 40-something%.
Yeah.
And he talked about it afterwards about how he couldn't get it out of his head, and it's just like, it was crazy. Now, if he makes one of those, history probably looks completely different.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Rockets probably still win that series, but it could have gone to 6, even 7, you know, because that just sucked the life out of them losing that. And, what a tragic moment for him. I mean, imagine that happened in the now era of social media. Like,
forget about it.
Yeah, that would have crushed him. You know, we used to work with Kenny the Jet Smith at Turner there, And I remember talking to the Jet about that game because I think he had 7 threes. And he was trash. He was talking his trash after that game, saying, you know, like, I knew he was going to miss. I knew he was going to miss. And I was going to hit those threes as well.
Yeah, dude. So that Orlando team, they were super, super young when all that was happening. I think if that was a veteran team, I think we would have caught them a couple years later. It would have been more of a series. But yeah, after they lost that first game like that, because they were up like 20.
Yeah.
And everything fell apart, and they're just too young to be able to get their feet back under them. It was like when you see a young fighter in boxing who takes a heavy shot early on, and for the rest of like whatever the rounds are, he just can't get it together. That's what they looked like. It was like couldn't do nothing with them.
Yeah, that was. I feel bad for him because when he misses those first two, you think, you know what, like not the end of the world. Then he gets the rebound, and then he goes and does it again. You're just like, oh my god, like. My God, I just
you can always see on their faces they like do the close up when they're shooting and you're like, you don't want any part of this moment.
Oh right yeah. Here. Yeah. Yeah.
He had that look. George Hill had that look when the Cavs and the Warriors played. John Starks had that look.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I'm saying? Like you can see it. You can always see it.
And Mark Jackson's talked about that with John Starks before, saying he did not want any part of those free throws. You can tell.
That would be me. I'm gonna take me out of the game. I'm a third quarter player, coach. In the fourth quarter, if I can get me out.
All right, this next guy, he actually did end up playing for the San Antonio Spurs, but his best days, I think, were in the Lakers in the mid-90s. And I think you would probably like this guy. I think you would like watching because he was fun to watch. He was only a small guy. I know you're 6'3".
Nick Van Exel?
Nick the Quick. There you go.
I'm fucking on fire, dude.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, he was great.
He had, I think it was with Spurs. It might have been with the Mavericks. He had 40 off the bench in a playoff game one day. I can't remember who that was for. But, But he was awesome, man. I would love him to be playing in the NBA right now as well. I think he'd have a game that would adapt because he could hit those threes. He was quick, a lot of scoring, love to get out there and run. I think he'd be perfect for today's game.
Yeah, he would be really great. Nick Van Exel is one of, if you're putting like a list together, one of the coolest NBA players of all time. I remember he showed up like in a rap video or two.
Yeah.
He had the little cut out of his eyebrow. The fucking Mexicans loved him because he wore the socks that came up to his knees. Yeah. We were like convinced he was part Mexican. here's how likable Nick Van Exel was as a player. He eventually went and he played with Dallas. And he played with Dallas during the 2003 season, 2002-2003. Right. So they played the Spurs in the playoffs. And he was giving us the fucking business. And normally that's like all that I need to hate a player.
Yeah,
I just couldn't hate Nick Van Exel. He was just too cool, just too fucking cool. He was great. I think you're right. He would do wonderful in today's NBA.
I think that he might have then had that 40 off the bench against the Spurs. Then it might have been for the Mavericks against the Spurs. I can't think of the game, but I remember he was just a bucket when he came out there. And I especially love those guys. You know, 5'11". 6 foot, and they can just go out there in traffic and hit those little jump shots, and that's what's crazy. I mean, you know, for us normal size guys, when you see an NBA player up close in person, you're like, man, these guys are huge. And then when you see a guy who you're eye level with, and you're like, this dude's in the NBA. How come I'm not in the NBA? You know,
that's exactly how I felt when I saw JJ Barrera in person. JJ Barrera. Excuse me. And I was like, this fucking guy, he looks just like all my cousins.
Yeah.
Why is he in the NBA? And we're not. And then it turns out, oh, because he's super talented and we are super not.
Can you imagine, though, what it must have been like for him when he was playing against his friends in high school and stuff? Like, he must have just been, like, dropping 60 points on those guys without even trying.
Forget about it. Yeah, yeah.
All right, you're doing well. A couple more to go here. Three more to go. This guy has been in the news recently because I think he opens his own...
Sean Kemp.
Yeah, Raymond, Sean Kemp. There he is.
Excellent.
Up in Seattle there. He's opening his own dispensary, which is great news for him and great news for the people of Seattle.
This is like a super strong pack that we got here.
Yeah.
This is like an outrageous... This is an all-star pack.
Yeah.
Sean Kemp is great. One of the all-time great dunks. one of the all-time great post-dunk celebrations. Just fucking outstanding. He's another one who would be great today.
As far as disrespectful dunks, I mean, you know,
he's up there.
What about the other dunk that he has there? I think it's over Chris Gatling, is it? Maybe or Victor Alexander, where then he daps him up after he just dunks.
That's Chris Gatling, yeah.
Yeah.
He dunked on him so hard that Chris Gatling was like, let me check your hand. That was great. That's all you can do in that situation.
Like, we saw LeBron dap up Paul George when Paul George smashed one over the Birdman, but that wasn't on LeBron. I mean, it's crazy to be the guy who gets actually dunked on who's like, yeah, man, that was awesome. I love that. Yeah. I love being dunked on like that.
I feel like I remember one year when the Nets and the Lakers played in the playoffs, and this was when they had Todd McCullough at center. And I might be making this up, but I feel like I remember this happening. And he was doing an interview because he was like a funny guy.
Yeah.
And they were asking them, you know, how do you plan to guard Shaq down low? You know, Shaq is a monster. He's like, at this point, he's the most dominant player in the league, one of the most dominant of all time. Yeah. And he said something like, my plan is to just get him in the post, have him back me down, and then dunk on me. And like, when a player can just accept it, nobody talks about the Chris Gatling dunk.
Yeah.
Because afterward, he was like, you got me. Good job. Everybody talks about the Mr. Dunk because, like, he didn't. It's just, what are you going to do?
So let me ask you this then. If you could choose one, a dunk like, you know, Sean Kemp on Elton Lister, or Pippen on Patrick Ewing, I know that's obviously one of the big ones as well, or hitting like a game-winning three-pointer in front of the opposition bench in the playoffs?
Oh, I want the dunk. I hitting a game-winning three is cool. We get celebrated as a team, but I'm a little too selfish. I want like my own moment that is just on YouTube forever, and I just want to fucking the Pippen dunk, especially the Sean Kemp Alton Lister dunk, is like, it's really, really good, but they didn't have a ton of backstory there,
right?
With the Ewing Pippen dunk, there was like 7 years of just hate boiling. Everybody forgets that was the year Michael Jordan was out of there, so it was like Pippen's team. They were fighting, trying to stay in the playoffs, and he just fucking, yeah, like I would love to dunk on Kevin O'Connor. Boom! I would pay like real actual money. I would pay $10,000 cash right now if I could like pay somebody. They give me a pill. I take the pill, and then it gives me one dunk. I would gladly pay that. Dude, we used to play basketball at this place in San Antonio called Sun Valley Elementary, which is like in the neighborhood where I grew up. And it was like, you weren't supposed to play there. They had like a fence that was all set up, whatever, but you could just crawl into the fence. They have barbed wire on the top, but you could go underneath it because there was like a gap there. And so we would go play there. But because it was an elementary school, all the goals were only 8 feet tall.
Oh, awesome.
So by like seventh or eighth grade, everybody could dunk on them. Yeah. And we thought we were fucking awesome. What was outrageous though is like, they had full court there, but it's outside on the pavement. And it wasn't an official full court. So it was like 200 feet from one side to the other.
Right.
And also the court, they were angled and it just were like, but still it didn't matter because we just wanted to dunk.
You know, Kevin Garnett as well, when we used to work with him at Turner, he was telling a story about how in the summer months, some of his friends wanted to play against him. So they would do the same thing and lower the hoop so they could try to dunk on Kevin Garnett, you know, like because he's their buddy. Kevin Garnett loved playing those games because his buddies were all like, oh, man, they think they're in the NBA because they're playing against me. And they're getting some dunks off as well, which is awesome.
When I got to go, I was at the TNT studios when we did that show together.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they like asked me to stay the next night to do some other stuff. But I was sitting around waiting in the lounge area, just trying to not be starstruck by like all of the players who are having me walking through. And I was sitting there minding my business, and Kevin Garnett came, but you could hear him both like six rooms down before he was even in the hallway. And I was like, oh, shit. It was so exciting to see Kevin Garnett. I was like, I was incredibly pumped.
He never, ever stopped talking, ever. And like you're saying there, sometimes I'd walk past like his makeup room or whatever, and there's no one in there, and he's just still talking. Like, you know, it's like, who are you talking to, Kev? You know, and he was great. But Yeah, he was one of those guys that I thought he was actually... I wish that Kevin Garnett off camera was the guy that they could put on camera, because on camera I felt he was a little bit sort of restrained. He was trying to sort of be within himself.
Trying to hold it in, yeah.
Yeah, but when the camera wasn't rolling, he had some of the best stuff in the studio there, because it was just, he was just like, this is me, man, this is me. And that was awesome.
Give him a show on HBO and just let him go nuts.
Okay, well, this next one.
Opposite of Tim Duncan.
Yeah, interesting, because we kind of have talked about this guy, and he's the one guy that you give a pass to, that even though he was a Houston Rocket, he played for the San Antonio Spurs.
Mario!
Oh, yeah, there he is.
That's my guy.
Yeah.
That's my guy right there. No, he really, I'm not playing around when I say he won us a championship, because early in the season, the team was playing, they were playing terrible, and we had Mario. And we had never had a guy that I could remember do this, but he was like in the news talking shit about the Spurs. Like, what are we doing? We're right. Not tough enough. We're not this. We're not that. We should be the best team in the league, and we're not. And then after he did that, they fucking took off. Dude, if you watch, this is like how much of a basketball nerd that I am about all this stuff. But if you watch the 1999. Is on VHS and then later moved to DVD, the Spurs championship thing that they put out whenever a team wins a title. And if you watch it, they like talk about this exact thing, but they show a clip of Mario Elie dunking, like coming through the baseline, and he dunks, and it's like a not quite slow motion clip, but slow enough, and just all down his back and shoulders is muscles. And it just looks so, I remember seeing that as a kid and being like, oh fuck, this guy must be the strongest guy. And
yeah, yeah.
Just ripped because he was hanging off of the rim. That's great. Mario Elie's awesome. He's great.
Yeah. Yeah, he's awesome. I've been trying to get him to come on this, but I haven't heard back from him yet. But hopefully I'll get him on there soon, because I think he's got some great stories to tell, because, you know, being a role player on those teams, and like what you're saying now, you know, like he's around those teams. He's not afraid to speak his mind. And clutch. He always delivered in the big moments there. Okay, yeah, exactly.
The kiss of death.
That's what I mean. Like, you think about hitting that three-pointer in the game seven on the road, and then you
in
just
front
give that
of the
to
bench.
The...
In front
yeah.
of the bench.
Oh, yeah, that was...
Just
that
like you were saying. Yeah, I think that was part of the reason when he talked shit that everybody listened to him, because he had already been through it. He'd been through the wars, and we didn't have anybody like that who had. So he starts talking, and this is like, David Robinson's got to listen to Mario Elie, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. All right, next one here. This guy, he's got one of the coolest blocks of all time.
Lafonso Ellis.
Oh, yeah.
I already know the one you're talking about. Yeah.
Who is it who goes up? I can't even remember who that is who goes up and tries to block him, or who tries to dunk on him.
I think it was, Robert Pack?
Was it Robert Pack? Was it? Yeah, I can't remember. But he just catches it, rolls it in his arm, and then he just sort of stays in bounds. And it's like, man, what an awesome block that is. Like, that's one that just still holds the test of time.
Yeah, he was – I saw that one, like, they would show the basketball highlights in the morning before the bus would come. And so I was watching it, and that's how I saw it. I didn't see it when the game happened. I just saw it the next day. And, yeah, I remember he – just stops him midair and then holds it like behind his back and looks forward, and you're like, motherfucker, this is outrageous. I don't remember who it was, who the block was on, though. It was either on Robert Pack, or Robert Pack had a similar kind of block.
But... yeah, well, they were probably teammates as well.
Oh, Denver. Yeah.
You know, I don't know if it was Isaiah Ryder. Maybe Isaiah Ryder sort of is popping into my head for some reason. Maybe someone in the chat knows who it was.
Yeah,
but
someone looked that up.
Yeah. Hey man, that was awesome. You pretty much cleaned the deck then. I don't think there was anyone you really missed out. Only Carl Herrera, really, but you got him in the end anyway. So
yeah, yeah,
you got there.
When I did the thing, the other thing with Skeets,
yeah,
on the
that
podcast.
Was awesome.
I was like the reigning champ. I'm trying to stay the no dunks champ.
Well, you'll be pleased to know then that of some of the other guests I've had on here, there's a bit of trash being talked between Nate Jones and John Schumann, Ariel Helwani. Ariel Helwani was incredible on this. He said to me afterwards, he goes, "Have you got another pack?" We ended up doing two packs at the time because Ariel was just talking about it. So I might try to form together some sort of like Sweet 16 tournament and have some sort of battle, and you can represent the Midwest division there.
All right, I'm in. Just no, as long as we don't get like a Rockets heavy pack, I'm good.
All right, Shay, thanks so much for your time, man. This was really good fun. I hope you enjoyed it too, and all the best. Good luck with everything. I know you've got another book you're working on. You want to give that a quick pimp right now?
It's called Wrapping Other Things, but it won't be out for a year, so don't worry about it.
Okay, well, yeah. Anyone who's familiar with your work, I'm sure will be looking forward to it, and this has been great. So thanks again for your time.
All right, dude. Later.
Thanks, man.